due to greed and a lack of morals. They know that these bastards are constantly up to no good and should be watched every waking moment of every bloody day. Americans hate the man, especially the boss man. They believe they should get their fair share of the pie. They believe that the workplace should not be the place where they die. They believe that the employers must be forced to behave properly. As you can see, we live in a nation of people who believe in racial equality, women's rights, labor unions, a clean environment, and fair treatment for gays and lesbians. Even on the one issue where Americans skew conservative, the death penalty, support for capital punishment has dropped dramatically in the past 5 years, thanks in part to the work of those students at Northwestern University who found at least 11 innocent people on death row in Illinois. While over 80% of the public used to believe in the death penalty, that number has dropped to 64%. When asked how they felt about capital punishment, if it was guaranteed that a first-degree murderer received a sentence that would never let him out of prison, support for the death penalty drops to only 46%. This is a stunning drop in support of one of our nation's weirdest and cruelest activities, one that is practiced by no other Western industrialized country on this planet. In fact, a recent CNN poll found that 60% of Americans now support a nationwide moratorium on executions while a commission studies whether the death penalty is applied fairly. How did this happen? It happened because the American people have a good heart and an active conscience. The majority will never support the killing of an innocent human being, even if they still believe in the death penalty as a concept. That is why we will see an end to capital punishment in the not-too-distant future. As people become educated about how we may be putting innocent people to death, they will not continue to support such a risky endeavor. This goodness that I believe is at the core of most of my fellow Americans is what leads them down the liberal road more often than not. They do not want others to suffer. They want everyone to get a fair break in life. They want their planet to be around for their grandchildren to enjoy. Conservatives know this is the real America, and it drives them crazy to live in such a liberal nation. You can hear them any day of the week on talk radio or the Fox News channel, screaming, foaming at the mouth right-wingers. Have you ever wondered why they're all so angry? I mean, listen to them. They spend all day, every day, just spewing so much bile about traitors, liberals, faggots, liberals, weasels, liberals, the French, liberals. I sometimes worry that they're going to choke on their own venom, and then someone is going to have to invent a Heimlich maneuver for hate. Here are a few examples from our sacred airwaves. Oh, you're one of the sodomites. You should only get AIDS and die, you pig. How's that? Why don't you see if you can sue me, you pig? You got nothing better to do than put me down, you piece of garbage? You have got nothing to do today. Go eat a sausage and choke on it. Michael Savage. Anything liberals can do to bring down Christianity and Judaism is good for them, because their minds are warped, because liberalism is not a philosophy. Liberalism is a mental disorder. Michael Savage. God says, earth is yours. Take it. Rape it. It's yours. Ann Coulter. We need to execute people like John Walker in order to physically intimidate liberals by making them realize that they can be killed too. Otherwise, they will turn out to be outright traitors. Ann Coulter. We should invade their countries, kill their leaders, and convert them to Christianity. Ann Coulter on September 11 terrorists. I will tell you, when Michael Moore says that this president is an illegitimate president, he crosses the line. He crosses the line into anarchy, all right? Bill O'Reilly. It is true that if you are poor and can't afford a good lawyer, your odds of going to prison skyrocket. But you know what? Tough. Bill O'Reilly. Feminism was established so as to allow unattractive women easier access to the mainstream of society. Rush Limbaugh. You guys on the left, you weren't there in the Cold War. You're not here now. If we ever listen to you, we're all going to be bowing at the feet of some dictator someplace else. Sean Hannity. They're a bunch of gutless, spineless cowards. Sean Hannity on Hollywood Leftists. Canada is a left-wing socialist basket case. What kind of friends are they? Sean Hannity. One day I was talking to the actor Tim Robbins, often an object of the right's bellicose babbling, and he said, why is it that they are so mad and angry all the time when they already control the White House, the Senate, the House of Representatives, the Supreme Court, Wall Street, all of talk radio, and three of the four cable news channels? They got their war, they got their tax cut, and their commander-in-chief has a 70% approval rating. You think they'd be happy, but they're not. It does seem pathological to be unhappy when you are in charge of just about everything. Imagine how we would behave if Jesse Jackson were president, the liberal Democrats controlled both houses of Congress, Mario Cuomo and Ted Kennedy sat on the Supreme Court, and The Nation had the biggest news channel on TV. Man, we would be in seventh, no, eighth heaven, and you'd hear the joy in our voices and see the smiles on our faces. And that's when it hit me. The right wing is so upset precisely because they know they are in the minority. They know Americans, in their hearts, do not really agree with their side, and they never will. Americans, like most humans, don't want to be around people who are filled with hate and meanness of spirit, and that is why they are so angry, because they know they are a dying species. They know the chicks and spicks and the fags are taking over, and so they are trying to get as much damage done as possible before their political breed becomes extinct. They howl the howl of a dying dog, and they wail as the dinosaurs must have in their final days. Instead of fighting them, we should pity them. Of course, most Americans would never describe themselves as liberal. In the last two decades, it has become the dirtiest word in American politics. All a Republican has to do is brand an opponent a liberal, and that's supposed to be the end of that loser. It hasn't helped that liberals have played right into their hands, first by stopping their own use of the word, and then by acting as minimally liberal as possible. Liberals have acted and voted conservatively so often that they have redefined the term wimp. This is why Americans usually hate to vote for liberals. A liberal leader is often an oxymoron. Liberals don't lead, they follow. Conservatives are real leaders. They have the courage of their convictions. They don't bend, they don't break, and they never give in. They are relentless in pursuit of their ideals. They are fearless and they take shit from no one. In other words, they actually believe in something. When's the last time you ran into a liberal or a Democrat who stuck to a principle just because it was right? That is why most Americans don't trust liberals. You never know which way they will bend. At least with Republicans and conservatives, what you see is what you get. And in these scary times, that reassurance is comforting to millions. The other problem is that many liberals aren't much fun, and they certainly don't look like they're having a very good time. Who wants to hang out with that crowd? But Webster's Collegiate Dictionary defines the word liberal this way. Not narrow or contracted in mind. Not selfish. And not bound by orthodox tenets or established forms in political or religious philosophy. Independent in opinion. Not conservative. Friendly to great freedom in the institution or administration of government. Liberal is also defined as generous, and implies largeness of spirit in giving, judging, acting, etc. And that is exactly how the majority of Americans think, act, and behave these days. Though they won't use the word itself, they are the living, breathing definition of liberal in their everyday words and deeds. Just as most independent, free-thinking women rarely use the word feminist anymore, their actions speak louder than their lack of a label, and feminist is exactly what they are. So let's not get hung up on the terms. Most Americans don't approach the world with labels, but with common sense. To the majority of Americans, it just makes sense that the air and water should not be trashed, that the government has no business poking around an adult's bedroom or genitals, that it isn't right to deny people a chance simply because of the pigmentation of their skin. Americans don't define these as political issues, but as basic logic. While this attitude may actually be a textbook definition of liberal, why don't we start to look at it and define this cultural shift in an entirely different light? Let's start saying the following. A new common sense majority rules the land. Is it common sense to have 75 million people go without health insurance for most, if not all, of the past 2 years? Of course it isn't. That makes no sense. Is it common sense to let just 5 companies own all the major sources of information and news in America? Absolutely not. Is it common sense to see that every person has a job and makes a livable wage? You bet. That makes good sense. What decent thinking person wouldn't be for these things? We need to set the common sense agenda and start calling the shots. The small group of right-wingers who now control most facets of our lives are the no-sense or nonsense minority. They do not represent the vast bulk of this country. You may be thinking, yeah, well, if that's true, then why does Bush have such high approval ratings? To me, the answer is simple. America was attacked. More than 3,000 people died. It's basic human nature that if you have been attacked, you will rally behind your leader, no matter who that leader is. The high ratings for Bush are not an endorsement of his policies. Rather, it is the response of a frightened country that has no choice but to back the man charged with protecting them. America has not fallen in love with Bush. It's more like love the one you're stuck with. Let me say it again. The overwhelming support for the war in Iraq only came after the war began. Before the war, the majority of Americans said that we should not be invading Iraq unless we have the backing and participation of all our allies and the United Nations. But once the war began, the average American wanted to support the troops and wanted the troops to come home alive. After all, it is their children who were sent over there. What else were they going to say to the pollster on the phone when it was their son or daughter or their neighbor's kids who were in harm's way? Support for Bush is actually very weak. The economy is in the crapper. People are struggling every day. And there is no way Bush can keep them and his rich buddies happy at the same time. Although the citizens of America love their country and want to support it, if they don't have a job or one that pays all the bills, that is what will be on their minds come election day. So take heart and take a look around you. You live in a nation full of progressive thinking, liberal-leaning, good-hearted people. Give yourself a pat on the back. You won. We won. Let's take a victory lap together and then get to work on fixing the great disconnect, how it is that in a nation of lefties, the right hand controls everything. They do not represent the will of the people, and that has to change. Start acting like the victors you are, and get out there to claim the country that is truly ours. Chapter 10. How to Talk to Your Conservative Brother-in-Law. You know the scene all too well. Thanksgiving dinner. The large extended family has gathered once again around the table to share good times and a hearty meal. The cranberries are ripe, the bird is plump, and that brother-in-law of yours at the other end of the table is at it again. The Bush tax cut is going to put this country back on the road to prosperity. The room goes uncomfortably silent, and somebody tries to change the subject. The brother-in-law, a know-it-all who treats your sister nice but is an obnoxious ass nonetheless, continues. He goes through the familiar litany. Too many deadbeats are on welfare. Affirmative action is reverse discrimination. They should build more prisons and throw away the key. Finally, your cousin Lydia, who is home on holiday break from Antioch College, has heard enough and calls him a racist and a dick. Suddenly, Grandma's special dilled mashed potatoes are flying across the table like an American missile on a sunny morning in residential Baghdad. And a nice warm gathering of family and friends has turned into the culinary version of crossfire. Let's face it, almost every family has at least one right-wing reactionary of its very own, and there's not much you can do about it. It's a statistical certainty that for every two liberals, there will be one person who longs for the days of Strom Thurmond and legally accepted date rape. I seem to have encountered most of these guys in the past year. Many of them have written me long letters filled with a passion rarely seen on our side of the political fence. Some stop me on the street and try to engage me in some form of heated debate. A few of these times, I have asked if they would like to sit down and have a cup of coffee with me, though I don't even drink coffee and they themselves clearly have had way too much of it. I don't engage them in argument, but rather listen to them rant and rave about Bush, liberals, towel heads, and welfare queens. It's quite a spiel they spew. Their litanies of grievances are long, and they all sound remarkably similar, as if they get their daily talking points straight from Conan the Barbarian. They seek nothing less than ridding the planet of bleeding-heart multiculturalists wherever they may be having gay sex. But if you listen long and hard enough, you can hear their faint and distant cries for help. It's clear that they suffer from a unique pathology that is slowly driving them insane. They are, at their core, very, very afraid. They are afraid because, ultimately, they are ignorant. They are ignorant of much of the world that exists outside their own. They haven't a clue what it's like to be black or hopelessly poor, or wishing to kiss someone of their own gender. This basic ignorance leads to their overwhelming and permanent state of fear. The fear quickly manifests itself into hate, which eventually leads to a very dark place. They become consumed with a desire to actually harm others, if not by their own hands, they are usually too afraid to do it themselves, then by having the state act in their stead. Take away their funding, eliminate their jobs, execute the bastards. This hate becomes not just political, but personal, as anyone who has ever been married to one of these guys, or had one as a relative or neighbor or boss, knows. It is a rough road to hoe when you begin your day with an inherent anger toward everyone who isn't you. There is no school of therapy I know of to cure this illness, no medication developed by pharmaceutical companies for this conservative rage. Actually, the drug companies need these Republican voters to ensure that they will never truly be regulated, so it's in their best interest to make sure that these angry white guys are never healed. I firmly believe that many of these conservatives can be shown the error of their ways. They can be encouraged to think differently about the issues we are concerned about, to see them in a new light that will neither threaten them nor take away the core values they hold dear. I believe that many are lost in their own anger and have been manipulated by propaganda intended to get their blood boiling. The corporate, religious, and political chieftains know just which buttons to push to get otherwise decent and well-meaning people on their side. I think there is a way to turn this around, to convert that brother-in-law of yours. Now, you might say, whoa, wait a minute. I'm not into missionary work. Not if it means I have to walk among these cretins. But don't you want to see change, real, lasting, progressive change in your lifetime? Don't you want to pull the rug out from under this supposedly conservative movement that infects our Congress with so many Republicans? Don't you want to have a little fun? I'm not talking about trying to change the minds of the terminally bigoted. This is not about trying to win over the lunatic right. They're already too far gone, and frankly, they're too small to worry about. I'm referring to the people you know and, yes, love. They take good care of their kids, they keep their houses fixed up nice, they volunteer at the church, and they always, incredibly, vote Republican. You can't figure it out. If he seems to be a good guy, why does he align himself with the party of Attila the Hun? Here's my theory. I don't believe these people really are Republicans. They are just using a word they heard because the word was associated with tradition, common sense, and saving money. So they stuck the label on themselves. After all, Who was the first Republican you heard about in history class? Honest Abe Lincoln, the guy good enough to be on the penny and the $5 bill. Plus, he got you a day off from school. These people are, in truth, Republican in name only. Rhinos. Ask them a series of questions. Do you want a clean environment? Would you live in a neighborhood with black people? Do you believe in going to war to resolve our differences with others? Most of the time, they will not give the standard Republican answers. I have a friend who refers to herself as a Republican, but when I ask her if women should be paid as much as men, she responds, "We should be paid more." When I ask her if people should be allowed to dump waste into the lake where she lives, she reminds me that she sits on the board of the local nature preserve. When I ask her how her mutual fund is doing since she was able to get rid of that liar Clinton, she says, "Don't ask." So I say to her, "If Bush has driven the economy into the ground and cost you untold thousands of dollars, if the Republicans want to make it easier for people to dump shit into your lake, and if you think you should have the same rights as men, then why on earth do you call yourself a Republican?" "Because the Democrats will raise my taxes," she responds without missing a beat. That is the rhino mantra. Even though these Republicans clearly do not believe in much of the Republican platform, and they know the Republicans will make many parts of their lives more miserable, they hold on to that Republican label because of just one thing. They think the Democrats are out to steal their hard-earned money. As I've said, I believe we live in a liberal majority nation. But if we really want to pull off a slam dunk of permanent change, we need to bring a few million of these rhinos over to our side. They are waiting there, wanting to jump the fence, just as long as they can take their money with them. I've come up with a bunch of suggestions for how we can enlarge our majority by reaching out to our rhino friends and relatives. Some of these will require a bit of humility on your part. Many of them, I'm convinced, will work. It's time to raid the conservative right of this vast pool of soft support they have enjoyed for far too long. At the very least, following my suggestions will lead to a much more peaceful Thanksgiving dinner. 1. First and foremost, assure your conservative friends or relatives that you do not want their money. You do not want them to make less money, nor do you want them to lose what money they have. Right off the bat, let them know that they love their money, and that's just fine by you because you love yours too. It's just a different sort of love. 2. Second, every political argument you make must be about them and for them. They base every decision on, how does this benefit me? Instead of fighting this self-centeredness, just go with it, embrace it, feed it. Yes, you say to them, this is good for you. The conservative lives life in the first person singular. I, me, mine. And that is the pronoun-centric language you must speak if you are to be heard. 3. Journey into the mind of the conservative. This is the dark continent you must venture to if the conversion is to be successful. What you will encounter in the conservative mind is fear. Fear of crime, fear of enemies, fear of change, fear of people not exactly like them, and of course, fear of losing any money on anything. If they can't see it, interracial couples don't live in their neighborhood, they are afraid of it. If they can't touch it, 300 years of slavery that happened long ago, then they can't understand why things are the way they are. If they can't smell it, no industrial incinerators in their part of town, then they think the planet is in good shape. 4. Respect them the way you would like to be respected. We are asking them to be decent people and care about something other than just their money. If we ourselves are not decent, especially in the way we treat and talk to them, what are we asking them to become? Like us? I hope not. 5. Tell them what you like about conservatives. Be honest. You know there are many things about conservatives that we like and believe in ourselves, even though we usually wouldn't be caught dead saying them out loud. Say them out loud to your conservative brother-in-law. Tell him you, too, are afraid of being a victim of crime and want to prevent criminals from getting away with their actions. Tell him that if America is actually attacked, you will be the first to defend the defenseless. Tell him you don't like freeloaders either, especially that roommate you had in college who never lifted a finger to pick up a damn thing and turned your place into a pigsty. He will see that you are, in some ways, just like him. Tell him how dependable conservatives are. When you need something fixed, you call your redneck brother-in-law, don't you? You yourself can't fix a damn thing, and neither can any of your whiny liberal friends. Also, when you need a job, who hires you? The conservative who owns the business, that's who. You don't go hit up your slacker liberal brother-in-law for a job, do you? And if you need someone beat up, that bully who's been picking on you, you certainly aren't going to ask your uncle at the Unitarian Church to do it for you. You never know when you're going to need that conservative relative. Conservatives are organized, on time, efficient, well-groomed, and consistent. These are all good qualities and attributes, and we wish we were more that way. Come on, admit it. Where has being disorganized, inefficient, disheveled, erratic, and always late gotten us? Nowhere. Give a rhino his due, and you'll find him more willing to listen to what's coming next. Six, admit that the left has made mistakes. Ouch, this is a tough one. I know, screw them, we're not the ones who need to confess. But if you admit that, on occasion, you have been wrong, it's easier for the other person to consider what they have been wrong about, too. It also makes you appear more human and less of a jerk. I sat here for 2 full days staring at the computer before I could bring myself to continue on this point. But here's a start on what we've been wrong about. Mumia probably killed that guy. There, I said it. That does not mean he should be denied a fair trial or that he should be put to death, but because we don't want to see him or anyone executed, the efforts to defend him may have overlooked the fact that he did indeed kill that cop. This takes nothing away from the eloquence of his writings or commentary, or the important place he now holds on the international political stage. But he probably did kill that guy. Drugs are bad. They fuck you up, slow you down, and ruin your daily existence. Even though Nancy Reagan can kiss my ass, you really should just say no. Men and women are different. We are not the same gender. Do I have to show you the drawings? We are conditioned, whether through nature or society, to have our own peculiar quirks and desires and habits. The trick is how to make sure that those quirks are not too annoying to the other gender. For instance, very few women pull out a gun and shoot someone on the street. The chance that a woman will mug you tonight on the way home from work is somewhere around nil. That is a quirk specific to my gender. Likewise, very few men could give a shit about making the bed. Why make the bed? Who's going to see it? What are we doing, protecting the sheets from something we don't want them to see during the day while we're at work? It's really a bad idea to have sex before you're 18. Okay, maybe I'm just jealous because I had to wait until I was 32. Nonetheless, the price to pay for teenage sex is pretty high. Unwanted pregnancy, disease, and ending up with one ear bigger than the other because it's always cocked toward the front door in case the parents come home early. Who needs this? And if possible, no one these days should have a baby until they are well into their 20s or 30s. There is practically no way in our surf-based economy for you to pull this off without a lot of pain and suffering. MTV sucks. Watching dumbass images of women, violence, and the real-world actors who have seen one too many episodes of The Real World themselves is the worst possible way to spend an afternoon. You'd be better off having teenage sex and then reading a book together. Granola is bad for you. It is filled with sugar and fat. One study found that many brands of breakfast granola are higher per serving in saturated fat and sugar than 5 chocolate chip cookies or 1 slice of orange carrot cake. Vegetarianism is unhealthy. Humans need protein, and lots of it. Put down those sprouts and pick up a T-bone. The sun is good for you. Your skin needs at least 10 minutes of direct sunlight a day for a much-needed shot of vitamin D. Quit slapping all that sunblock over your kids. If you really are concerned about UV rays and skin cancer, then ask yourself, when was the last time I attended a Greenpeace meeting in order to help make things better? People who commit violent crimes should be locked up. Dangerous people should not be out on the street. Yes, they should get help. Yes, they should get rehabilitation. Yes, we should look for ways to reduce the root causes of crime. But no one has the right to assault you or rip you off, and if you can't bring yourself to show at least an ounce of outrage against those who would harm you, then you just look like a wimp or a nut to most normal people. In fact, I want to assault you right now. Your children do not have a right to privacy, and you better pay attention to what they are up to. Right now, as you are hearing this, they are doing something. What are they doing? See, you don't even have a clue. Stop this audiobook and head upstairs immediately. Not all unions are good, and in fact, many of them are just plain lousy. They got their members to sign up for the company's 401k plan, and then, poof, the money vanished. They adopted right-wing nationalism and turned Buy USA into a racist movement. There are two good unions, SEIU, Service Employees International Union, and UE, United Electrical, Radio, and Machine Workers of America. Contact them if you want to organize your workplace, or for some general online guidance on how to unionize, check out www.aflcio.org/aboutunions/how-to/. If you belong to one of the lazy, ineffective unions who are in bed with management or Bush, then you need to get your sorry ass down to the next union meeting and run for office. SUVs are not inherently evil. The fact that they use so much gas, that they are constructed to be killer machines, and that yuppie weasels drive them in urban areas is evil. Mostly SUVs are just horribly uncomfortable, and the ride is too bumpy. Getting back to nature is a dumb idea. Nature doesn't want you anywhere near it. That's why nature created cities, to keep you as far away as possible. Bill O'Reilly makes a few good points. He's against the death penalty, he's an advocate for kids, and he opposes NAFTA. Okay, he's still a jerk, but even a jerk can be right some of the time. Too many of us hold a hoity-toity view of religion and think the religious are superstitious 15th century ignoramuses. We're wrong, and they have as much a right to their religion as those among us who have no religion. This arrogance is a big reason the lower classes will always side with the Republicans. We have a namby-pamby way of saying things. It's like we invented our own language, and it annoys the hell out of anyone we're trying to get to listen to us. Knock off the PC mumbo-jumbo. Quit trying to be so sensitive, and just say what is on your mind. Less wimp and more oomph. Why are you still bitching about right-wing author Ann Coulter? Sure, she's crazy as a loon, but she's got more balls than the entire Democratic Leadership Council. You're just jealous because we don't have an Ann Coulter. And stop looking at her damn legs. That's why she's got you so jumbled up. The proposed liberal radio network? What a stupid waste of time. Radio? Are you serious? What century are you in? Gee, why stop there? Let's set up a Liberal Pony Express. How about a liberal Morse code? SOS, get into the 21st century. Get a TV network. Get an internet network. Get Snoop Dogg and 50 Cent to run for office. Animals don't have rights. Yes, they should be treated humanely. Yes, Tyson Foods and all the others that harvest chickens are disgusting, but freeing chickens from their factory farms is idiotic. They don't know how to survive in the wild, and they're just going to get hit by a truck. And lay off carrying on about the milk, no matter how bad it is for you. You just look like a dumbass if you go on national TV like PETA does to argue that beer is better for the body than milk. This shit just makes me want to go kick my dog. Nixon was more liberal than the last five presidents we've had. His administration opened up a dialogue with China. He was instrumental in establishing affirmative action in hiring and protecting the rights of women. He was the first president to sign agreements on nuclear weapons control. Nixon was responsible for the 1970 Clean Air Act and created the Department of Natural Resources and the Environmental Protection Agency. He gave us Title IX to force tax monies to go to women's sports. He also attempted a type of welfare reform that would have guaranteed an income for the poor. Nixon still should have been run out of office, and the millions of dead in Southeast Asia will haunt him throughout eternity. But to think that he was the last liberal in office just makes me want to puke. After admitting that you're not always right, you will find your conservative friend a lot less defensive and more willing to listen. Then it's time to make the case for why he or she should consider looking at things in a different light. The most important thing is to never make the moral argument about why the Pentagon should get less money or why a sick child deserves to see a doctor. We have tried those arguments for ages and they don't work with conservatives. So save your breath and keep in mind that it's all about them. Begin every point with this one sentence. I want you to make more money. Then take a stab at discussing the issues with them using the following statements. Paying workers more money makes you money. Dear brother-in-law, when you don't pay people enough for them to take care of life's essentials, it ends up costing you and everybody else a lot of money. If workers have to take a second or third job, their productivity suffers on all three jobs. They aren't able to concentrate on one specific goal, making you a lot of money. They're preoccupied, thinking about how they have to get to that other job to make that other guy a lot of money. So your employee's tired, he makes more mistakes, he has more accidents, he leaves early, and his overall job performance is lower than if he was just concentrating on you. Why do you want him helping some other schmuck make money? If you paid him a decent wage, he'd only be thinking about you. When employees are not making a living wage, they often end up having to seek food stamps or other public assistance. Who is paying for that? You. Why do you want to pay higher taxes for stuff like that when you can pay them directly and look like the good guy? Cut out the middleman and reap the benefits. When you pay your employees more money, what do you think they do with it? Invest it in stocks? Hoard it in offshore accounts? No, they spend it. And what do they spend it on? The stuff you make and sell. The working class is the consumer class that gives you your profits because they are not saving anything. They are roaming the aisles of Sam's Club buying things they don't really need. So every dollar you and other bosses put out there in wages is almost immediately recycled right back to you, improving your profit margin and making your stock rise. You get doubly rewarded. If you pay people squat or lay them off, they can't buy your stuff. They become a drain on the economy. Some turn to crime, and when they turn to crime, it's your Mercedes they want, not some junker Oldsmobile in their poor neighbor's driveway. Why put yourself in a position where you might become a victim? Pay a living wage, give raises, provide good benefits, and then you can go home to your palace knowing that right now those happy workers are not taking the hood ornament off your car, but rather they're out tossing all their cash right back at you. Health insurance for everyone will make you money. Brother-in-law, you are an employer, and your employees don't have health coverage. This costs you a lot of profit. They miss work, you lose money. They're absent longer, you lose money. Others work overtime to pick up the slack. You lose money. They get other people sick. You lose money. They work sick. You lose money. But employees who have health insurance go to the doctor right away and get medicine and get better quickly. If they are given paid sick days, they stay at home for a couple days and are back at work in no time making you money. And they feel better about their jobs because they're treated well. So they will work even harder. employees whose health insurance allows them to see a shrink or avail themselves of preventive medicine are more productive and contribute more to the company. The short-term outlay of money for a group health plan has enormous long-term benefits that, in the end, will save you a bundle of money. Providing daycare for your employees will make you money. Absenteeism is a huge drain on our gross national product. Estimates put its cost to our economy as high as $50 billion a year. The average employer loses almost $800 a year per employee due to unscheduled absences. 45% of the time, an employee is a no-show for personal or family reasons, which means that mom or dad has taken time off from work because the babysitter didn't show up, or the babysitter got sick and needed to go home early, or the kids were sick and needed to go to the doctor, or the babysitter's kid got in trouble at school and the babysitter had to leave, etc., etc. This, my conservative friend, costs your business money. For the price of an on-site daycare room or facility, the company can make more money, you can make more money, and the babysitters can get real jobs with benefits. And millions of lawbreakers who pay their child care people under the table can stop leading a life of crime. Joining a union will make you money. If you are a worker and not a boss who considers himself a conservative and hates unions, I have one question. Why? If you want to make more money, union is the way to go. According to the U.S. Department of Labor, union workers make an average of $717 a week. Non-union workers like you make an average of $573 a week. Being a conservative is about you and you making as much money as you can. So why stay non-union? Because you don't want to be a part of a group? What do you have against democracy? Some unions aren't democratic. Don't join those unions. Start one yourself. That free country you're always yakking about? That's what it means. The right to freely assemble. That right is so important, they made it number one in the Bill of Rights. Clean air and water save you money. Each year in the United States, air pollution kills 70,000 people, equal to the combined number of deaths from breast and prostate cancer. The related health care costs from air pollution have been estimated by the government at between $40 and $50 billion annually. A 2003 study found that people living near one of 38 Superfund toxic waste sites in New York City show significantly higher rates of asthma, respiratory diseases, and cancer. If you're not in New York, don't worry, you're still getting burned.